Good morning. Today is Friday, December 17th, 2021, and the time is 9:12 a.m. I now call the meeting of the Finance Commission to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. Dr. Armstrong has contacted me. He said he will be arriving shortly. So with that, we don't need to discuss his absence. At this time, Commissioner Cooper, will you please conduct a roll call?
Chairman Hellier here. Dr. Armstrong, you just mentioned. Bob Orkoff.
Here.
Hector Cerner.
Here.
Larry Long.
Here.
Will Lucas.
Here.
Cliff McCauley.
Here.
Sharon McCormick.
Here.
Vince Fuente.
Here.
David Scanlon.
Here.
Laura Nesri Warren.
Here.
So, we have 10 present. Dr. Armstrong coming in will be 11.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, everyone, for being here this morning. We will now move on to Finance Commission matters. If there's anyone wishing to address the commission during the time of public comment, please fill out a witness affidavit form and bring it up to the front. Public comments or non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes, and agenda items are to 10 minutes. Any comments relating to a rule may be made at the time of the rule discussion. In accordance with the Finance Commission's policy on testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items related to final rule adoptions except upon majority vote of the commission, in which comments are limited to 10 minutes. Do we have any audience members wishing to provide general comments today? Seeing none, we will now move on to item 4. At this time, it's my great pleasure to recognize some of our past members of the Finance Commission, and I'm still not the dean of the sitting body. Chairman Lucas down there is our dean, but I've worked with many of you individuals, and it was a tremendous pleasure to serve with you, and I learned a great deal serving with each and every one of you. I guess Mr. Plunkett and I have the longest history of going back and forth, but it's always a wonderful sight, and because of the COVID protocols and such, we were not able to kind of give you a good send-off. So Each one of you provided a tremendous amount of leadership skills, and the way it works on the commission, I think, is what makes it such a great working board, because we have the public side and the industry side. And even though that, you know, everyone comes at it from different angles, I think it serves the citizens of Texas at the best ability that we possibly can, serving each and every classification of our industries. You know, we have banking, mortgage and savings, and then consumer credit side. And I think all that meshes together, and we're very fortunate to have such a wonderful team of staff that works at each one of the three agencies. And I know your perspective, you got to work with these staff members, and it's a top-notch organization from all three agencies. And so on behalf of the Finance Commission and our time that we serve together, I want to recognize each one of you with a little token of our appreciation. And at this time, let me just have you each stand up, and I'll kind of give you a little history about our membership here of how they've served and their capacity. So Molly Curl, if you'll come up first. Molly was a public member, and she chaired the audit committee and served for 5 years and a month and 22 days. So there you go. Thank you so much. Ms. Stacy London served as a mortgage member since June of 26, and she served for 11 years, 9 months, 18 days, and
wow,
2 years and 8 months as the chair. So served as a public member since 2009, 10 years, 11 months, and 18 days of service to the great state. And Mr. Plunkett, as I stated, our longtime friendship and service together was a pleasure on my part. So you served as a public member for 11 years, 9 months, and 9 days. Stacy has the longest record. And during that term, you served a little over a year and a half as our chair. So thank you again for your commitment and your time. Leslie or Charles, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Sure.
Any comments to guide us through this process, members? Before, I mean, your legacy and your history is rich, and so a lot of us are still trying to find our ways on this commission. me included. You notice that Wendy doesn't even let me have the gavel yet. Beating the heck out of my knuckles up here trying to get something in. So eventually, maybe they'll relinquish the gavel to me and give me that power that I guess I deserve at some point in time, but not anytime soon.
I would like to add, I just want to say thank you to each of you for your support of all three of the agencies and your guidance over the years. We very much appreciate your knowledge and your wisdom and your support of our agencies. We can't do this job without the commission, and y'all were very important members and very important to us, and we certainly appreciate the guidance that you've given us over the years. Thank you.
If I could add my comment to that, Chairman Melke, you covered it fairly well, but over the time period that y'all were here, we went through some interesting times, and y'all can remember. And we do appreciate the interaction with all of y'all and the guidance that you were able to give us. And the service to Texas, I think, is extraordinary. So thank you very much.
Having not worked with the group as much as some of the others here, I did have some limited exposure, and I truly do cherish those conversations and the guidance that you gave me along the way. So thank you. We appreciate your service.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, sir.
All four of y'all had an impact and an influence in how I serve in this board. Mr. Plunkett, I remember the very first meeting I attended, which I had no idea what I was doing. There was some subject, and you and I were on the same page. You and I were the only two that voted no against whatever was going on. And so since then, I represent you voting no. Yeah. Molly, your service as chair of the audit committee, I got to serve on that for a short period of time until I got kicked off. But I enjoyed working with you. Lori, we always had conversations inside about what was going on, and it was great. Stacy, and also Mr. Plunkett here, serves as our chairperson. Although, Stacy, I just thought you did an amazing job and was a great influence to me on other boards that I serve on. So thank you all for your service. Thank you all for your fellowship.
That's kind.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as well, the four of you were great. When I came on and learned from each and every one of you, and enjoyed your friendship more than anything. Thank you very much for your service.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for coming and getting to see you again, because it's almost like you snuck off in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You were there one meeting and gone the next. But it has been a crazy couple of years, and thank you for taking time to come back. We do appreciate your service.
At the luxury of the chair, I'm going to take a 10-minute recess. We'd like to reach out and have our fellow members mix and mingle. And I know y'all don't want to sit through the whole meeting, because I wouldn't want to do it if I was here. at this time, we'll take a 10-minute recess. We'll resume at, right at the bottom of the hour at 9:30. So we're in recess until then. I now reconvene this meeting of the Finance Commission pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. The time is 9:32. It was all a true pleasure having our former members with us, and I thank them all for making the trip down here this morning. At this time, members, before we take up consent items A1, A7, C2, and D2 in a single vote, I want to state that any commission members may request that an agenda item be removed from the consent agenda and be placed on the regular agenda so that it may be discussed and voted on individually. Do I hear a motion to adopt consent agenda items A1, A7, C2, D2 without any discussion?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Is there a second?
Chair McCormick, second.
Thank you, ma'am. Members, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Ayes have it. The motion passes. We will now move on to item 5, Finance Commission Operations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to mention one thing that it impacts all the agencies, impacts all of us, but and most of you probably are aware, but probably within the last week, you've heard about the Apache log, the 4J vulnerability. It's a Java-based logging utility that's been around forever. This is a vulnerability or a weakness in the system that nobody knows exactly when the weakness was discovered, but it was discovered recently. It doesn't mean that if you have it, that something bad has happened. It just means that the bad guys can get in and they can do a lot of terrible things. Now, again, hopefully you've seen this, that the agencies have gone through making sure that we're okay. In fact, I believe there's a DIR meeting this morning that I know our officer is there. But just to give you a little bit of last week, the Easterly, Jen Easterly, the head of CISA, which is a cybersecurity and infrastructure agency, said that this was kind of the worst threat that she'd ever seen. And so, I mean, that says a lot. So we've mobilized a lot of things. All the agency heads are alert. A joint statement came out to all of our banks that included, it was the OCC, the FDIC, the Fed, and state banking regulators issued a joint statement that was sent out to the banks, I believe, Wednesday, and basically said be on alert. The other thing I'd like to, so as an example, if you have a home security camera tied into your system, then that could be a problem. So you just have to go back to your, personally go back and make sure that everything is working properly and you, all your passwords are updated, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, from the Department of Banking standpoint, we know that our banks have had it, but there've been, the patches have been applied, and but there have been some attempts by the bad guys to get in the system, but so far they've been averted. And so we'll be working on this. Again, a lot of protocols have been established, high alert, but with the, let me just say with the, what's going on in Eastern Europe and then with the holiday season coming in, I think there's a high expectancy that the bad cyber criminals will try to exercise these, utilize these vulnerabilities to try to hack in. And I think banks, other financial institutions are high-value targets right now. So I just wanted to make that comment. Any questions from anybody about that? It's been in the paper. You can Google it. It's a very, very high concern. But so far, everything seems to be under control. Thank you.
That concludes all the operations?
Yes.
Okay, very good. We'll now move on to item 6, members audit committee report. Chairman Scanlon, please give us your report.
Sure. The audit committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2022 internal auditor's risk assessment and audit plan.
Thank you. Coming upon the recommendation from the audit committee, no second is needed. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, the motion passes.
The audit committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the appointment and reappointment of Grant Advisory Committee members Linda Davis-Demas and Laura Rosen, respectively.
Coming upon the recommendation of the audit committee, no second is needed. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Members, we're now moving on to items 7 through 11. Commissioners, do you have any items need to be discussed in open session for 7 through 11?
7 was on consent.
Okay, great. We will now move on to the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Commissioner Trotty, would you please give us your report?
Thank you, Chairman Holt. SML materials start on page 29 in your packet. Starting with the State Savings Bank industry, as of 9:30, we had 24 institutions with total aggregate assets of $438.4 billion. All of those institutions are well rated, and currently we have no supervisory actions in place in the portfolio. We are reporting September 30th financials for the portfolio, starting with capital. The capital ratios remain consistent with prior periods. We are seeing some decline in the liquidity space, which is helping to help those capital ratios rebound a bit. At the bottom of page 30 is the earnings. Glad to report the non-performing assets remain very low. We do continue to watch those on a quarterly basis, but at this point, the trend is looking good. Moving to the top of page 31, is the long-term assets, the long-term assets to total assets. That ratio has increased a bit. However, it is within a range that we're accustomed to. The liquidity risk, as I mentioned a bit earlier, is starting to, the liquidity levels are starting to decline a bit. However, we are noting that the trend in the loan to deposit ratio is continuing to decline, and so that may have a future impact on the earnings of the institution, so we'll continue to watch that. Moving on to page 32, I will move into the mortgage regulation division. We are moving into license renewal period, or we are in license renewal period, which started on November the 1st and goes through December the 31st. As you can see in the table on the bottom of page 32, all of our licensee categories have increased on a year-over-year basis. Most notably, the mortgage loan originator there at the bottom of that table, increasing from about 33,000 to 47,000. That does result in a tremendous amount of work within the department, particularly the license division. And so we've worked really hard to reposition some staff, hire some temporary employees, and do what needs to be done to continue to keep those licensing processing times to a reasonable time frame. Right now, we're running at a little under 60 days on licensing processing time. We did have a few challenges in the opening of renewals with the nationwide mortgage licensing system having some issues. We did post that on our website. They continue to work through those, and we're trying to help the licensees as much as we can work through those challenges. We will report at the next meeting the November and December renewal period, and so we'll have a better perspective on the license volume at that time. So moving on to the mortgage examination section, we have examined a larger number of mortgage loan originators this year compared to the prior year, and that's just because the entities that we examined had a larger number of licensees, so larger companies that we were dealing with. The violations are consistent with what we've seen in the past in the examination space. We continue to do some outreach in this space with our directors speaking at various conferences, as well as we continue to hold the monthly emerging issues to the industry to try to convey some of these issues and the challenges that we're seeing within the licensing space. We've also issued a mortgage compliance guide and posted that on our website to perhaps serve as a resource document to our population to help them with some of the challenges that we're seeing. Moving on to page 34, our vacancy status is located there at the bottom of the page. We continue to work to fill the vacancies that we have within the department and focus where we can to try to acquire, good talent within the department.
Let me ask a question.
Sure.
So your department, and I would assume it's true of all three commissions, did not terminate any employees during the COVID period for lack of work. Okay. So any employees that you need is just because of turnover. They've gone on to do something else or you've terminated.
Either turnover or increase in volume. We've increased our staffing, particularly in the licensing space, to fill some gaps and handle the additional volume that division is dealing with.
Yeah, a general comment is that does it seem any different today than 3 years ago trying to hire somebody?
Absolutely. The competition in the market is very, very tight, and what an employer desires from their employer these days is much different than what they did 3 years ago. So I would say, having to meet the employees to some extent on what they may want to come to work for a state agency, and the cost of living in Austin is also a challenge with hiring people that would be housed here in the Austin office. So those are just some of the things that we're facing as an agency.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to page 35 of the materials, we did conduct our quarterly agency-wide training for our staff at the end of October. We cover things that are relevant to them at the time. We also did conduct our survey of employee engagement, and we are required to do this every 2 years. And so we have completed that, and I did email that to the Finance Commission members. We are glad to report that our score is up from the last time. So we thought that was great, given everything that has gone on, the volume of work that we're trying to push through the agency, et cetera. And we also had a very good response rate. So we were pleased with that. We've identified some actions that need to be taken as a directorate group, and we're working towards implementing those and getting some change in that respect.
Those are really good numbers, though, Stephanie. You should be proud.
Thank you very much. I would say kudos to the staff. They work really hard in the volume on the banking side, as well as the licensing and mortgage examination has been tremendous. And I think, you know, pushing that during COVID, they're to be commended, certainly. The next session is consumer complaints. This is consistent with prior periods. The issues remain the same. Our aging of those complaint reports or complaint remain at a level that we're okay with. We have closed some of those that were north of 120 days since putting these materials together. So we're also pleased with that. That is all I have for presentation. Before I turn it over for the legal report, does anyone have any questions?
I just have a question. You mentioned that there's a consistency in problems, you know, with the violations you're finding. And you have a very great report. You mentioned that you have posted now some guidelines. So these guidelines have been now increased, improved?
I would say more transparent, if you will.
Yes.
We typically, I mean, these are the same things that we've been looking for in exams, but what we did is try to memorialize it and so that we could send these guides out ahead of time to our examination or our licensees so they could prepare better for the exam. I think part of it is not knowing what to expect during an exam, and so we provided them a how-to, if you will.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. I will turn it over to Ernest Garcia, our general counsel, for the legal report.
Good morning, Chairman Holt, members of the Finance Commission. Ernest Garcia, general counsel for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. The legal activity enforcement and legislative matters start at page 36 of your materials. During September and October, we had 5 enforcement, either letters or orders issued. We had 1 recovery fund application, and that is currently under investigation. We've not had any contested State Office of Administrative Hearing contested matters, since the last Finance Commission meeting, but we have resolved 2 that were pending, both licensing related. The first one is at the bottom of page 36, the Cree matter. Both of these are licensing denials, and in that case, both involve confidential issues. But suffice it to say that in that case, the individual, after he had filed his notice of appeal, had decided to withdraw his appeal. And so that matter is now terminated, and his license application is deemed denied. The top of page 37 was the patent matter. And that is an individual that also appealed his licensing denial as well. And after subsequent discussions between the individual and the department, the parties reached an agreement, and he was issued a conditional license. Middle page 37, or the bulk of page 37, involves the discussion about the litigation involving the Wagner matter, which y'all have heard me talk about before. The main thing to note there is that the Third Court of Appeals did grant him an extension of time within which to file his appellant's brief, and he now has until January 7th of next year to file his brief. We had 20 Public Information Act requests from during the months of September and October that we processed. As far as gift reporting on page 38, on October 8th and 9th, Commissioner Trotty was invited and served as a speaker at the Southwest Association of Bank Council 2021 annual legal conference. And she was a speaker there, and of course they also waived the registration fee, which would have been a gift, if you will, of $595 in value. As far as state and federal legislation that the department tracks, Those matters are summarized on pages 38 and 39 of your material. The main thing to note is on, with respect to state legislation, the voters on May 7th of 2022 will have on the ballot a constitutional amendment with respect to ad valorem homestead property tax exemptions for school districts to raise that amount from 25,000 exemption to 40,000. And then on the federal legislation, you may recall last time I was before you, we talked about the infrastructure bill and the possibility that there might be additional reporting requirements due to the IRS and so forth. And as you may know, on November 15th of this year, it became law, the infrastructure bill, and all it does is extend the traditional reporting requirements for certain transactions of more than $10,000, and it's mainly capturing digital assets and cryptocurrency. So fortunately, it did not get as expansive as we had feared that it might. And pending any questions, that concludes the legal activity enforcement legislative update. And again, pending any questions, I'll be followed by Associate General Counsel Ian Berry, who will be speaking of the wrap mortgage rules on page 40 of your materials.
Members, any questions for Major Garcia? Thank you. Mr. Berry, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. As Mr. Garcia mentioned, this agenda item two for SML, begins on page 40 of your materials. This is a rulemaking item. As you recall, in our last meeting, you all approved publication of wrap mortgage rules in 7TAC Chapter 78 for publication and public comment. They were published in the October 29th issue of the Texas Register. No comments were received in response to the proposal. Although no comments were received, the department did identify a substantive change that it would like to make on adoption, which is why this agenda item did not make it to the consent agenda. Specifically, it's one change, so I'll mention it. It is a definition being added to section 78.2. That is a section which has definitions that apply throughout the chapter and in the department's administration and enforcement of chapter 159 of the finance code. And the new definition appears on page 43 of your materials. This is definition number 8. Concerning the phrase make a mortgage loan. The materials in your packet contain a preamble which highlights the changes being made on adoption. Other than the change I identified, it's the same rules that you all approved for publication in October. So unless you have any questions, the department recommends that the Finance Commission approve adoption of the new rules in 7TAC Chapter 78 with the changes as to the proposed text as published in the Texas Register.
Thank you, sir. Members, any questions for Mr. Berry? If there's anyone wishing to address the commission for the SM rule, item number 2 from the audience? If not, do I hear a motion to approve the adoption of new rule in 7TAC Part 4, Chapter 78 concerning wrap mortgage loans?
Madam Warren, so moved.
Thank you, Commissioner. Second.
Commissioner McCormick, second.
Thank you, Madam. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Ayes have it. The motion passes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That concludes SML's information.
Thank you, Commissioner Trotty. Moving on to the Texas Department of Banking, Commissioner Cooper.
Thank you. Beginning on 61, this material is the same that you saw last time because it says of the year end 8/31. But in a recap, our number of banks at 215, it shows 363 million because of conversions. As of 9/30, we're going to be over 400 billion. So you'll see that at the next meeting. On 62, our number of problem banks, based on our definition, is at 10, which again is not a historic low, but it's still relatively low, which is a, I'm going to call it a lagging indicator of the condition of our banks. Enforcement actions are on page 63, shows a little bit of increase on our, under the bank side. If you will go to 64, it talks about all the information and things that we've done. I'm not going to detail every one of those. We did send out, it's at the top of page 64, we did send out a cybersecurity awareness notice in October 6th to basically recognize Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Back to examinations, and we talk about it. We are trying to conduct more examinations on an on-site basis, but we continue to work with the bank and with our personnel and make sure, because of whatever reasons, that they're comfortable. So it's more, it continues to be more of a hybrid model, that's going to increase, but I don't think we'll ever go back to the completely on-site like we used to. But there's not, our finalization of our new model is still, we're still working on that.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
You see it's going on, on-site audits or visits on a hybrid basis. What determines that? Is it ultimately determined just by the desire of the entity or the desire of your employee or?
Well, it's a combination of everything. And back during the height of COVID, you know, we were doing everything offsite. And so now with the vaccinations and everything, we have transitioned into trying to go back to more on-site. But a lot of these things we've learned, and I've seen every industry has gone through this, a lot of things that we felt like had to be in person can be done in a remote capacity. But I believe something that you said that possibly earlier is that nothing on the bank examination side, nothing is better than visiting one-on-one face-to-face with the banker and talking where you can communicate real-time. There's no lag time. If we're prepared to do it on site, as an example, we will talk to the bank and make sure that they're comfortable. In some cases, you know, depending on where the bank is, they could be having an outbreak, and it may be that they're not quite as comfortable to having people come in from the outside. So we just work with that. But we're seeing more were on site. And then the federal counterparts, they're still basically off site. We don't do all of our banks jointly with our federal counterparts, but if they're still off site, we will go in and we will, quite frankly, provide them with information to our federal counterparts. So it's a judgment call. I've given that authority. It used to be completely with me, but can't remember exactly when, but anyway, I gave that authority to our four regional directors, and so it's up to them what they want to do. But I will tell you that I think our people want to go back on site. So.
Thank you.
So beginning on 66 and 67, it's the application processing, and this is something we talked about in the audit committee, that the corporate division area continues to have a lot of activity. You'll see on the basically mid part of 67 where it was compared to your last report that you received. On the bank merger activity, I'm going to talk a little bit about that. There's one listed to Louise Bank is merging with the Dilley State Bank. So our number of banks goes down there, but our asset continues the same. Now, we have not listed on here, but one that happened this week, the Savings Bank and Texas Exchange Bank, which is slightly over $2 billion, is converting to our charter. I'll also tell you that we've had, within the last 2 months, discussions with at least 5 national banks that are in the process of converting to our charter. All of them have indicated that they have been thinking about it over a period of time, but with the activity in Washington, there continues to be a concern that they'd like to move as far away from Washington as they can. So I think y'all can probably relate to that. So what this means, I mean, some of these are fairly large, like the one that converted, after year end, Texas Capital Bank in Dallas is a $35 billion bank, huge bank. So we got these new, and based on what the boards and CEOs of these institutions are telling me is that these conversions will happen. Some of them we have the applications in, but we have to, we just don't accept everybody. We have to go through the approval process. So we'll be doing that, but assuming that they all convert, or at least the majority of them convert, it's going to continue to put pressure on us. And so, as Stephanie indicated, we're down personnel-wise. It takes a while to train your examiners, and so we're going to be dealing with stress a while. But the one thing, I think this is very important for y'all to understand and hopefully agree with. We have, by policy, we have timelines that a bank would have to be examined depending on its rating, let's say every 18 months. Okay. So when you have stress on your manpower, what do? You either take a little bit longer to get into that bank, or you shortcut your examination process. I've told all of our managers, one thing we will not do is shortcut our examination process or our quality of our examination. That's absolute no. If it takes a little bit longer for us to get into the bank, if we're supposed to be in there every 18 months, and we're in there on the 19th month or the 20th month, I'll take the heat with y'all for being behind schedule, for being behind policy, for procedure. But the main thing is, I want us to do the job that we're expected to do and the high standards that we have. We are also, I will call it risk focusing, because you can have two banks that are supposed to be examined at the same time, using as an example, and we may say, okay, we need to get into this one before we need to get into this one, just because of the risk profile of that organization. We're doing the same thing on our other entities, such as our MSBs.
Would you be comfortable, Commissioner Cooper, considering like one rated bank's going to 24 months or something like that?
Well, most of that is statutory. Okay. But we have a lot of discretion. Okay. But it is statutory, but from a standpoint, we have policy. We talked about whether the page 63, bottom of the page, talks about our compliance with examination priorities. Percent of exams conducted within our guidelines. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
We may be off there, but I would rather be off there than do a sloppy job going into our bank.
I agree.
And so that's what we're going to do. Now, these banks convert. we will be hiring more people, filling in from the bottom, if you will. It takes a while to get these people trained. In my opinion, we've really got some really good personnel, some senior personnel that can take the stress while we fill in from the bottom. But it's again, we're in kind of a new world. We're able to hire at the low level, at the lowest level. We're competitive with the industry, if you can get the right copy. And I think maybe some of y'all have dealt with that in your business. It's a little bit tough now sometimes. Everybody wants, pardon my French, everybody wants to work from home in their pajamas. And you can't do that via bank examiner, but we can offer some type of hybrid situation. So that's a long, long-winded story to say that's where we are, and I'll continue to report that to y'all each meeting. If any of you have any issues you want to talk about, either in person or in this meeting, feel free to let me know. Beginning on 68 and 69 is the non-depository side of the business, primarily the MSBs. This data is the same data that you looked at last time. On 69, it talks about the various activity that we're going through, and, you know, the events that our people went to. On page 70, as we promised y'all, this is all of the vacancies that we posted for. So position number, there's nine of those, and you can see where those are. Some of them are open until filled, and for instance, we have an examiner position, for instance, third from the bottom, financial examiner 5, that's a credit review specialist. We're hoping to be able to get some people from the industry that are possibly retired. That's a perpetual posting. Sometimes we get some, sometimes we don't.
Where are these geographically? Are most of them here in Austin?
No, let me see. Attorney, programmer, Austin, because that's where headquarters is. All the others could be in one of our 4 field offices. Because I think Stephanie mentioned it, it's hard to get people to move to Austin because of we end up the lowest cost of living, I guess, in the state for us is Lubbock. So people that go to Lubbock, they kind of like to stay in Lubbock. They wouldn't want to move from Lubbock to Houston or Dallas or even San Antonio because of the cost of living. So that is a problem. But we're trying to work with that, and we fired a new person. You'll hear from Lori Rod, head of HR. We fired a new person in HR that has some background that possibly will get us into areas that we have not been able to be in from a recruiting standpoint.
You know, I hear this common theme of difficulty to hire with the pay scale, and we are in a wage inflation period. What is the process to adjust those compensation levels for staff? I mean, we need to get ahead of that.
Well, we're looking at that right now. And so, for instance, in my opinion, in fact, Catherine and I talked about it with her group. We will, if we decide that we need to do something, if it's out of budget, we will come to y'all and ask for an exception. But I think with our SDSI status, we have the ability to flex. And we are looking at that. But we've got to be very careful on how we do it. Again, I told you that at the bottom level or the newbie level, we're competitive, compensation-wise, and possibly otherwise we have some problems.
Commissioner Cooper, is the same position in Lubbock, Texas paid with the same experience, the same in Austin, Texas?
Yes.
So maybe that's it.
That's one of the areas that we have a problem with because we checked into that years ago to be able to pay more in one locale than the other, and right now there's no flexibility to do that. Hmm. We're still looking into this. The only agency that's allowed to do that, is the Department of Public Safety, and they pay hazardous duty pay to be down on the border, as an example. I guess we could pay hazardous duty pay.
To be in Austin.
Yeah. We'll work on that. Okay, then beginning, so the turnover so far this year, that's page 72. We've had five resignations overall, and you see the reasons for those. Talking about competition from the industry, obviously our personnel are highly trained and the industry can pay, but for these people, we tried to counter the industry paying significantly, and that's just the way it is. It's always been that way, but it's worse now than it's ever been.
Can you say that, would our benefits be significantly higher?
Yeah.
Theoretically, our benefits are better from a retirement standpoint and possibly even from an insurance standpoint. But, you know, we can't, and we can talk about it, we can't pay sign-up bonuses of any consequence and things like that, so.
Well, I know, and I do think it's the initial pay that draws people, and then the benefits are certainly a consideration, but it's a second consideration. And I guess there's no, we're mandated by the state what our benefits are.
Yes. So.
I just think you got to sell them.
Well, you know, the retirement package is fantastic. In fact, I think it's possibly even better than our federal counterparts. But today, the younger people are not looking to stay with a company for 10 years or 20 years. They're just looking for current.
It's true.
It's just something all three agencies are dealing with. Glad we are stepping to y'all.
Agree.
I think the benefits package is an afterthought for particularly the younger generation. They're not that far along in their planning.
Yeah.
We try to do a lot of education about that.
But we're working, I think all agents, we're working with the colleges, universities. So some of them have biking schools. We do fairs, job fairs at these locations. We teach at these some of these banking schools, and so we create a relationship theoretically with a person that would like to come to work for us. But it kind of takes a special person to work on a business job. All right, so some other data, but in case y'all have, unless y'all have any questions, we can move to the legal update. Any questions from anybody?
Crazy.
We sped right past those last few pages. So I think the legal division report begins on page 81 of your materials. And just a couple of things I wanted to mention to you, nothing huge, but one thing is we do have a hearing set next month. This is in the matter of Robert L. Green, and individually and as president of Green's Mortuary. This is a funeral home in Bay City. Unfortunately, Mr. Green issued one prepaid funeral contract without any kind of authorization or license, did not appropriately reserve the funds as required by law. We became aware of it. We contacted him. He said, oh, there's no more. That's it. There's just this one. We issued essentially a warning letter. And then a few months later, we found out, oh, there are more. So we've now found out there are, I think, six of these contracts out there that we have become aware of. So these are completely unauthorized. No money has been reserved. The promise has been made to fulfill these funeral benefits. And the money is not there. So we did issue a cease and desist order against him. He did not respond to that. We have now set the matter for hearing before our contracted administrative law judge, and that's set to occur next month. As I said, we are seeking restitution for those consumers that we've become aware of, and also a monetary penalty against Mr. Green. Not very optimistic that we will recover much. We've done an initial asset search and it does not look promising, but we need to go ahead and get the judgment, hopefully. And then if we cannot collect on the judgment ourselves, we'll refer it to the AG's office. But that's several steps away. We'll see what happens. But for now, just want to let you know there is a hearing set next month on that.
So let's make some assumptions and let's even take it away from Mr. Green, but someone like Mr. Green. it's going to be months for this process through. If this is a dishonest person, in that period of time, they could continue to do what they're doing, take money from the public, and not have the money to back it up. Is there a way that we can warn the public in this market?
We have absolutely done that. We've issued press release. When we issued our cease order, we issued a press release. We sent it to local media. In addition to your point about can he continue to do this, we've issued the cease and desist order that became final. If we were to find another instance of a violation, we would refer that to the Attorney General's office for enforcement. So if we issue a cease and desist order and it is violated again, then we would pursue it that way.
How do you find out about another transaction?
Consumers call us.
So they got to know that something in their filling.
So for example, I mean, the nightmare scenario is someone has purchased one of these contracts. And when they go to, when the need arises and they need those benefits, they contact the funeral home and no knowledge, no acknowledgement or whatever, or at least whatever happens, there's no fulfillment of that promise. And then that's when we get contacted. So it's a very unfortunate situation. And a lot of these people that pay $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 for the prepaid funeral benefits, they can't afford not to have that in place when the need occurs. So it's a terrible situation, but we're doing what we can to alert the public and then enforce the orders.
We don't have the ability, once an action has taken place, we don't have the ability to go in there and oversee their operation.
We've issued the cease and desist order. He is supposed to shut down.
But to make sure
down.
It doesn't happen again, we also
work with the Funeral Services Commission. So when we became the Funeral Services Commission oversees the actual operations of the entity. Our oversight is just over the trust fund.
Okay, so there are no
the time. Sale of the contract and the placement of the funds in trust to make sure that when the need arises, the funds are there. That's our role. We're in frequent communication with the Funeral Services Commission about the actual services that are provided. And when we find one of these operators off the reservation, we are absolutely working with Funeral Services Commission. And I believe that they've taken action as well to if he ever had a license as a funeral provider, that's been revoked as
that
well.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. So there were three orders issued during this period. Each of these were unauthorized money transmission businesses. Those involved just monetary penalties. And in each case, the entity either decided to get a license with us or has ceased activity. Mentions public information requests, nothing unusual there. And then the total orders on the next page, and then future elections. So those are the only things that I wanted to mention, unless you have any questions.
Just a comment. Many, many times these funeral homes are not in existence anymore. They've closed. And so when the party tries to get the benefits, so there's nothing there anymore for us to deal with other than what we can try to do. We still have to go through the same process. And I will say, you know, what can we do? We have had people on site to work through some things. We have, Catherine mentioned that we put notices in the paper. We have talked to TV stations about certain issues, and they come on site and would like us to be there and talk about it. And we've done that in certain cases if we thought it was required. So we try to use everything we can to protect the public.
Good. Any questions, members?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else,
Commissioner? That's it.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Pettijohn, Office of the Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I begin on our report, I just want to open with a few economic highlights of interest that I've just run across and I've
tend to like to share with you. First, it's kind of a global Texas economic issue related to sales tax revenues. And I noticed that for the month of November, Texas sales tax revenues were up 19.4% from November of 2020. So we certainly, I mean, that corresponds to what we all understand in terms of some of the heightened economic activity we've seen over the last 12 months. Moving a little bit in more to household debt and household credit, if we look at the third quarter data from 2021, we're seeing that household debt increased again by just almost 2% and is now over $15 trillion. The balances were growing across gains across all types of debt. Overall, though, when you compare the rate of growth of the debt versus the rate of inflation, debt's growing really rather slowly. That's not a marked increase necessarily compared to inflation. Debt balance per capita in Texas increased a modest, like 0.44% in the third quarter, while the U.S. as a whole was really a bit more flat. And despite these higher household debt numbers, household debt as a percentage of disposable personal income continues to rest around historic lows. So generally, that's a good sign. But there's a slight decline in consumer confidence noted in November. That's typically concerns about suspected concerns about maybe inflation and the new Omicron variant. Motor vehicle sales are still in some decline. It's thought to be due to rising prices brought on by lack of raw materials and computer and component parts like computer chips. One particular astonishing metric that came out is the Manheim Index on the value of used vehicles. If you compare the value under this index of used vehicles from a year ago, and they're up, used vehicles are up 43.5%.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
So that was a little bit surprising to me that it was that. I know they're up, but I didn't really know that high. So anyway, those are just a few highlights that I thought were wanted to share. Turning to the report on page 87. First, we'll start out with our examination report. And, you know, we're only dealing generally with our first, kind of our first quarter data. The reports in here are really the September-October data, but some of the narrative might touch on first quarter is the end of November. But our exam program is on track. We've done 26% of our targeted exams as of the first quarter, so that's great, great work. There's some details listed here on three multi-state examinations that we have either concluded or are participating in. And then we also have some notes on two scheduled upcoming multi-state examinations. And I'm really proud of the work of our exam team and our staff personnel that we've been able to serve in a leadership role in a number of these examinations and plan to continue to do so. And so I think that speaks a lot towards the professionalism of our staff and our ability to serve in this capacity. And I'm very proud of the work that they're doing in that regard and leading those efforts. We continue to spend a lot of time working on staff development to ensure that we're bringing along, you know, our new classes of examiners and moving folks through the particular development programs and certifications that we have within our exam team. Looking at page 88, again, these are kind of early charts just with 2 months of data, so there's not a whole lot, but the acceptable level of compliance, at least thus far this year, at the bottom of page 88, we've have all groups over the benchmark of 85%, so we're pleased to see that. Page 89 on investigations, we're still running behind on investigations. These are a bit more challenging to do, although we expect we're going to catch these up throughout the year. It's just early in the year, so we haven't focused on those as much at the moment. Consumer assistance activity is moving along, progressing normally. There's on page 91, just notice there's some kind of interesting, a couple of new elements in the top complaint types. I always kind of look through these to see if they're, for the most part, they stay kind of, well, things might jockey in position between number one and number three, but they usually you have the same categories within most of these. But in the regulated lending non-real estate, there's a new overcharge of fees is a new category that moved into the top three. And then in the auto title, moving into sort of the second position, I guess, is the issues about the vehicle title has moved into that second position. So those are, I mean, again, it's only two months of data, so it's still early, but those are kind of interesting. And then on page 92, we've done this ratio for some time of how these complaints close to total active license or registrants trying to to kind of peg that activity in perspective with the size of the population. And we have a completely new number one and new number two in the order, and motor vehicle sales finance has moved into that first position with the highest ratio now, and credit access businesses is in second. But overall, the ratios are fairly low, and so those are, you know, we'll watch those throughout the year. Previously, property tax lenders kind of sits in the number one spot. A lot of that has to do with the fact that their denominator is so small, it's such a small group that their ratio tends to stay kind of high. And motor vehicle sales finance was number two, and then the credit access business is number three. So anyway, we see a little change there, but we'll watch that. Again, it's early. Page 93 has got the credit access business data through the third quarter of 2021. And we've seen a little bit of, you know, we saw a pretty major dip in originations during the pandemic in 2020. We've seen some recovery of that, that loan originations are up. We still see repossessions are still up about 20, a little over 20% from where they were in 2020, but they decreased. We hit a high mark, you know, in the second quarter, but they've come back down. You see more data on that on page 94. When those totals reduced to third quarter repossession totals are down to about 7,850, but the total repossession rate of about 4.5% still above our historical averages. So again, monitor that as it goes forward. Page 95, moving into licensing, we've concluded our motor vehicle sales finance renewal within this last period. That closed on October 31st. We had 91% of the industry group renew their license. We still typically have a few late renewals that will come in that we're working through, but that was about what we expected. I think about 92 or 3 will ultimately renew, but it's about where we thought we would be. Right now, we've got a pretty significant renewal period going on with regulated lenders and credit access businesses and property tax lenders and some of our registration. That's online from November through December. We were able to offer regulated lenders a discount of 50% on their annual assessment, and credit access businesses received a discount rate of 15% on their renewal assessment from our agency. And that's the first time they'd ever received a discount on their renewal assessment. But certainly it appeared that was well within the means that we could accommodate within our agency revenue expectations. I did want to mention that we've been working to implement Senate Bill 1132. As you may recall, this is a bill that and relates to crafted precious metal dealers, which the rule is going to slightly address later. But we had some changes to our IT systems that we need to be able to identify who is a jewelry store and who is not, because of who is going to be subject to potential examination. And so we've been working with the IT teams and making some developing and testing some changes to be able to accommodate that, to identify and maintain that information in conformity with the new statutory definition to deploy that exam mandate. Page 96 is our dashboard of licensed regulated entities, registered entities. And really the only notable item is up at the very top, upper left, as you'll see, the motor vehicle sales finance, as we've concluded the renewals, we have the non-renewal. It's the same pattern every four quarters. When you have a big group that doesn't renew, it kind of dips back down and then it grows back up throughout the year. So that's, but otherwise, a very stable pattern of activity. I did want to mention moving on to financial education. Just that we were able to, you know, some of this came about as part of our sunset review and the work that we try to coordinate with the other agencies, and that we were able to partner with the Department of Banking on financial education and conducted a webinar together. And that was very successful. And so we're pleased to be able to continue to try to partner up and do some financial education opportunities cooperatively. We've also continued some of our work in offering those financial education activities. There's other information on activities, communications, industry outreach, and personnel. Others have talked about personnel. Page 98, you'll see we've experienced in this chart through the end of November, one interagency transfer through the first quarter, and none of those were financial examiners. So I think I'm happy to answer any questions, but that's really the high points of the information that we have in the packet. And then
I have a question back on page 89 at the bottom. Investigations completed. So you're telling us how many you've completed. How many are on the books to be done?
I can get you that number maybe at the conclusion of the legal report. I look at it. I want to say it's in the 35-ish range, but I mean, they're scheduled. Some of them are already out with field people. Some of them are back in Austin being reviewed. Let me look that up. I can look that up for you while they're doing the legal report.
Okay. And so I guess my concern was, and again, y'all have always handled these kind of things. So an investigation is something more than a complaint. Complaint comes in, look it up, answer the question, and maybe that kills that first complaint. So investigation is at the level that, oh, okay, we've got something we need to look into. It seems like time works against us on an investigation. Well, it works against us on everything. But so how do you determine the priority of the other 30 investigations that are open? But like you're saying, yeah, some of them are already in process.
Sure, they're in various stages of their process, and some are close to being closed. They're ready. Some are just they've been referred from the complaint, and they're getting started. And I mean, you do some kind of triage on those. If there's a severe issue, those will get escalated up. I mean, okay, especially like if legal identifies something, they may make a recommendation to put a priority on something. But we have a tracking status about where everything is. We go over those weekly with senior management about where the status of those are.
Okay. I do have a second question on page 97 top, and maybe it's going to come up, but you brought the TFPE, mm-hmm, and in the audit committee, you talked about us looking at, you know, the vision may have changed. And I guess what I ask is, could we get what the vision was or what the white paper was on the objectives, the goals of that thing, so we can look at that and make educated suggestions?
Sure. I mean, I expressed some of those at the last meeting, but I'm happy to try to put some of my thoughts back down on paper that I thought we had kind of established. Again, it was sort of a collective view of the commission at the time. And I'm happy to provide it. But essentially, what some of the metrics that I had provided in terms of where the fund was and what the expectations were for funding, that's sort of where the fund is at a level to support those. But I can provide those to
you. Okay, that'd be great.
I have a question. Sure. Mike, you said you reduced the fees. As we start trying to build up money to pay for a building, will those type of policies end? Or is that the same? Is that the same bucket, I guess I should say?
It is. It can be the same bucket. Now, if we're trying to reserve some funds, you know, we set some of those aside. But we tend to not to like to have really major swings if we can avoid it. We'd like to taper or slowly increase because that's just better, sure, for the industry, for predictability. So I don't know about end, but they might be modified slightly if there are additional revenue needs or funding needs that the agency might have. We don't expect that at the moment, but if there are additional needs, we'll have to adjust that over time.
Okay. And one last thing, Commissioner Page, this will be an easy one, I think. I had a chance to sit in on one of the financial education seminars that y'all did with the Department of Banking, and I thought it was done pretty well. Do y'all have any sense how many people are sitting in on these? Do y'all have a number at all?
We do. We track metrics, and that's really one of our agency's performance metrics on the number of individuals that we provide some kind of financial education
well done
to.
Yeah.
And so
more and more people can, yeah, tune in.
So we do report those. I can't tell you that one specifically. I don't have that number, but I can get it for you if you'd like to see it.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions, members?
Okay, I think we're ready for Mr. Rigby and the legal report.
Good morning, Mr. Rigby.
Good morning. Michael Rigby, General Counsel for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Members, the legal report begins on page 101 of your materials. First section is contested cases. There's two contested cases listed there. the Clay Cooley entities, which we discussed last time, deals with documentary fees for a motor vehicle dealer that desires to increase the amount of the fee above $150. That is ongoing. The judge has reset the hearing for April, late April, and issued a scheduling order setting various deadlines for the parties.
During this time, Michael, do they continue to charge the increased fee that they predict that they should have, or do they drop back down to the 150 level?
They could if they wanted to. They have the freedom to do that.
If they were judged unfavorable, they would have to do a refund.
That's correct, okay. Yeah. And they did charge those for about a year. And so if the ultimate decision is that those fees that they did charge were unreasonable, they'll have to pay restitution to consumers.
Understood. Thank you.
The next case listed under that section is Primaland Capital Partners. I have some new news after we put together the legal report. It says on November 30th, after reviewing the judge's decision in that case, we issued a withdrawal order that we originally issued. We withdrew that back. There's a technical piece that we were able to reach an agreement with the other side to dismiss that from the SOA docket. So that's no longer a pending case as of today. Any questions about either of those two cases? Okay. At the bottom of page 101, there's also some reporting violations for pawn shops. 10 orders were issued, 4 were injunctions, and 6 were imposed for administrative penalties for violating a prior injunction. And then moving on to the top of page 104, our pending rule actions. There's 4 listed, 2 for this meeting and 2 for the February meeting. I believe the debt management service rule was on your consent agenda, so it's already taken care of. And Matt Nance is here to present the crafted precious metal dealers rule after I wrap up. In February, we'll be presenting rule actions on regulated lenders and home equity lending. And then finally, on the top of page 105, we wanted to bring your attention to a lawsuit brought by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau against First Cash and Cash America. They're two related companies commonly known as First Cash. They're headquartered in Fort Worth, and they are a significant licensee of ours in the pawn shop space. The lawsuit that was brought was based on violations in the Military Lending Act having to do with pawn loans. However, I understand the lawsuit did not involve conduct within the state of Texas, but because First Cash is a significant has significant number of licenses in our state, we want to bring that to your attention. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, but that's all I have.
Yeah, on page 104, right under where it says litigation, what is you're reporting there, but what's our role in that?
We don't really have a role. We have not.
It's that you're only reporting because they're someone that has a license with us.
They have a license with us. It's a contentious set of facts. It has to do with Credit Access businesses. If you recall from a few years ago, I think it was the fall of 2019, the Attorney General issued an opinion which said basically that the businesses that we were licensing as Credit Access businesses could conduct business or extend loans just as a credit services organization. So that caused some ripples throughout the space, I understand. One of the other contentious issues having to do with Credit Access businesses, otherwise known as payday lenders, has to do with the ability of local governments to regulate those businesses. So in this case, the city of Austin was attempting to regulate the Credit Access business run by TitleMax. There are similar local ordinances throughout the state. I think virtually every major local government city has adopted these ordinances. And so there's a lot of litigation and interest around that. This one is against Title Match or between Title Match and the City of Austin. Something that has gone on for, I think, at least 2 or 3 years, and it's gone up and down the appellate court system. And so we wanted to make sure to keep you apprised of the latest development with that.
And if I could also add, I think one of the concerns that's raised in this is whether or not these ordinance might be preempted by state law. And we think that that's sort of a significant policy issue that has, would be of interest to this commission and certainly of interest to us about what role state law has in the light of some of these. So that's, we think it's an important enough policy question that we bring. We don't bring forward to you every lawsuit by that's affecting one of our licensees. It's just this one, I think, has some important policy questions that we all are following.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Nance.
Good morning. Matt Nance, Deputy General Counsel, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Today I'll be presenting two rule proposals. The first is item D3, starting on page 108 of the materials. This rule proposal adjusts the registration fee for crafted precious metal dealers, or CPMDs. These are businesses that purchase precious metal items like jewelry from consumers. They sometimes advertise themselves as gold buyers or we buy gold companies. The OCCC regulates these businesses under Chapter 1956 of the Texas Occupations Code, and they've had to get registered with the OCCC since 2012. As the commissioner said earlier, this proposal implements a bill that the Texas legislature passed in the most recent legislative session, SB 1132. That bill added a provision to the Occupations Code requiring the OCCC to conduct at least 10 examinations of crafted precious metal dealers each year. And the adjustments to the annual registration fees are intended to cover the cost of those examinations. Because the OCCC is a self-directed, semi-independent agency, we're responsible for ensuring that the costs of regulating each industry are covered by the fees that we collect from that industry. So the rule amendments are in our fee rule for crafted precious metal dealers at section 85.1011. And the proposal is to increase the annual fee for permanent locations from $50 to $70, and to increase the annual fee for temporary locations from $25 to $45. And we believe the extra $20 amount will cover the costs of examining these dealers. As far as the process goes, in November, we sent out a pre-comment draft of the rules to stakeholders and held a webinar for stakeholders to provide input, but we didn't wind up receiving comments in response to that draft and webinar. So that's the proposed change, and I'm happy to answer any questions about it.
Thank you, sir. Members, any questions for Mr. Nance this morning on this proposal? Hearing none, if there's anyone wishing to address the commission before the OCCC rule for item 3 in the audience today. Seeing none, do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments to 7 TAC Part 5, Chapter 85, Subchapter B, concerning rules for crafted precious metal dealers?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you, Commissioner. Second?
Dr. Armstrong, second.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. The motion passes. Item number 4, Mr. Nance.
Okay, so next I'll be discussing item D4, starting on page 113. These are proposed amendments resulting from rule review of Chapter 88 governing debt management providers. So debt management providers are companies that negotiate lower debts with creditors on a consumer's behalf. The activity is also sometimes called debt settlement or debt negotiation. These companies are required to get a registration from the OCCC, and the OCCC regulates them under Chapter 394 of the Texas Finance Code. As a reminder, rule review is the process under the Texas Government Code. It requires state agencies to review their rules every 4 years to make sure they should still exist and make any necessary updates. So this proposal includes changes to 5 different rule sections. In section 88104, we'd add language explaining that registrants must provide certain updated contact information, like the business name or names of principal parties, within 30 days after the change occurs. This kind of works together with a change to 88202, where we'd remove the requirement to provide a list of principal parties to the OCCC every year on renewal. We're hoping this will simplify the process for registrants to keep the OCCC notified of changes to their principal parties and contact information. In section 88110, we'd propose changes for our review of a registration applicant's criminal history, and that includes updates from some recent legislation. In 88202, this is the rule for annual reports for these debt management providers. We're trying to simplify and clarify some of these annual reporting requirements. Several parts of the debt management annual report are actually required by statute in Chapter 394, and we wanted to update the rule to clearly refer to each of these statutory requirements. We'd also replace the current requirement to annually provide the list of owners and principal parties with a requirement to annually certify contact and principal party information. Again, the idea is to simplify the process. So instead of having to provide a separate document every year that lists all principal parties, a registrant could just keep the OCCC updated when there's a change. The amendments to section 88304 are also intended to simplify annual reporting. Currently, that rule says that registrants must provide certification document for each of their credit counselors to the OCCC every year with their annual report. There's a requirement in the statute to provide credit counseling in connection with these debt management plans. But in looking at that rule that requires documentation every year about the credit counselors, we believe it's not really necessary for registrants to provide that certification documentation every year. And it would be sufficient to maintain just the language that says they have to provide it on our request. We've also been looking at some other modifications that would further simplify reporting, including possible changes to the reporting system. That's an issue we'll be looking at over the next few weeks. And when we bring this rule back for adoption, it's possible there could be some additional changes to further simplify reporting. Finally, we have some amendments to section 88306, explaining that maximum debt management fees are described by section 394.210 of the Finance Code, and that a provider may not impose unauthorized fees. Regarding debt management fee limitations, we thought it might be helpful to have an advisory bulletin summarizing those limitations, since limitations are located in a couple different places and require providers to do some analysis to make sure they're in compliance. And that's why we published an advisory bulletin on that issue in November. As far as the process goes, in September, we sent out an informal advance notice to stakeholders, letting them know we were getting ready to review the rules and asking them if they had any suggestions for updating the rules. We also published a comment, or we published an intent of notice, or sorry, we published a notice of intent to review the rules in the Texas Register, but we didn't get any comments on those two notices. And then in November, we sent out a pre-comment draft of the proposed amendments and held a webinar for stakeholders to provide input. However, we didn't receive any comments in response to that draft and webinar. So that's the summary of the proposed amendments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Sir, members, any questions for Mr. Nance this morning? We have anyone in the audience wishing to address the commission for OCCC Rule Number 4? Seeing none. Do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments to 7TAC Part 5, Chapter 88 concerning rules for consumer debt management services resulting from the rule review?
Ms. Larry Long, I'll make a motion.
Thank you, Commissioner Long. Is a second?
Will Lucas, second.
Thank you, sir. Members, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then in follow-up to Commission Member Puente's question about the number of pending investigations, I stated, I guessed a little bit. I was off a little bit. So the number of pending investigations currently is about 25, not 35. And then Christine Graham is here, and perhaps she has a response to Commission Member Long's question about the number of attendees at the joint webinar.
Yes. Hi, Christine Graham, OCCC. We had 30 attendees at our holiday spending webinar. That was a pretty specific topic. The more general topics we've done with Department of Banking have had closer to between 50 to 60. For the quarter, we've provided 205 individuals with financial education.
And are these basically advertised just by emails or online?
Yeah, we do. We have a TIFI Facebook page, a TIFI Twitter account. We also do a mass MailChimp is a kind of a mass email. Email. We use that for kind of a financial education group that we have. And then I know Department of Banking also did some outreach as well.
We'll keep up the good work. It's well done. Wish more people were watching.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes our report.
Thank you, Commissioner Pettyjohn. Members, it is now 10:48 a.m. on December 17th. At this time, the commission will go into a closed session pursuant to Chapter Government Code, Section 591.074. Staff attending the executive session today is Commissioner Cooper, Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez, General Counsel Catherine Ryer, Human Resources Lori Wright, Assistant Attorney General Sarah Wolf. Commissioner, is that to you?
Yes.
Perfect. At this time, the commission requests that all non-commission members leave the room with the exception of the aforementioned staff.
Can I get out? Okay.
Members, it's 11:05 a.m. on December 17th, and the commission is ending the closed session of the meeting. There was no action taken during the closed session. Is there anything else that we'd like to discuss this morning while we've gathered here today?
By May.
Absolutely.
As always, Merry Christmas. Thank y'all.
Yeah, everyone have a wonderful holiday season. Thank you for your time here today. Sarah, it's good to see you here again in person, and congratulations on the third child. And on behalf of all of us, we want everyone at the three agencies and your staff to know how much we appreciate the hard work, and hope y'all have a holiday season with your loved ones, and we'll see you in February.
Amen. Have we ever had a meeting this short? I think
you didn't come yesterday.
I know. Look, you know, getting here at 4 o'clock is not going to work.
But yesterday is part of the reason why today's meeting.
Yeah, it is. It was good.
Oh, the meeting is officially adjourned at 11:06. Oh, you got it.